The story of the Irish in Maine. Tomorrow is St. Patrick's Day, a time for parades, green beer, corned beef and cabbage, storytelling, and all sorts of festivities celebrating Irish heritage. But despite the expression, the luck of the Irish, the tale of the Irish in Maine is a tough one. Many Irish immigrants came to Maine fleeing desperate poverty and famine. They took on backbreaking jobs and faced widespread discrimination. Yet they stayed and flourished, influencing politics, education, art, commerce, and more. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we'll learn more about Irish heritage and history in our state. We'll also learn about a genealogy program connecting Irish American Mainers with family back in Ireland. Is your family Irish? Have you always wanted to learn more about that heritage? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. With St. Patrick's Day tomorrow, we decided today would be a good time to discuss the history of the Irish in Maine. I have three very qualified guests with me in our studio. Pat Dunn, the chair of the Maine Irish Heritage Center. Maureen Coyne Norris with the Maine, is it pronounced Galtect? DNA Project, and Michael Connolly, an author and historian and professor at St. Joseph's College. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you have a little bit of the Irish in you? Do you have stories of a forebearer who made their way from Ireland? Our phone number, 1-800-399-356. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Thank you all for being here today. I know it's a very busy week for all of you. Michael, I'm going to start with you, though, with just some basics on the history of the Irish in Maine. I was surprised to learn this morning that there have been Irish immigrants in Maine in the early 1700s for a very long time.
Yes, indeed. Let me start off, Jennifer, by saying La le Farach Hona Yiv, which means happy St. Patrick's Day to everybody. Yes, there were, in fact. As with the rest of America, the Irish who first came here came from the northern part of Ireland, and they were mainly Scots-Irish Presbyterians. And some of the first ones that came to Maine had tried living in New Hampshire, moved over, as a lot of New Hampshire people do, to the lovely state of Maine. There was no room for them or food in the Portland area, and so some of them moved up to the Brunswick-Topsom area. Those are the first ones that we're aware of.
But the first mass migration was during the potato famine in the 1840s, correct?
That's right. And one of the things that's not very well known is that there were a series of famines. The worst one was in the middle of the 19th century, 1845 to 1850. But there were subsequent famines. A really bad one was 1879 to 82. And that's exactly the time that both my grandmother and grandfather came from, right in the heart of Galway, which was affected badly by the famine.
And that's what I was going to ask you. People I know in Maine who are Irish American, most descend from Galway, Connemara, Western Ireland. Is that the case throughout the state, or is that the case in the Portland area?
It's especially the case in the Portland area. And that gets us to a topic that's in the news a lot today, chain migration. The reason that they came, so many of, as I look at the room today, all three of us have Galway roots and strong Galway roots. And so when somebody comes over, are able to get a job, then it becomes much more likely that they will pass that on, money from America, and send for other relatives to come. So in Portland, Galway is really the root of most of the Irish.
All right. I'm going to turn to you, Maureen, as chair of the Irish Heritage Center. Do you all try to keep count? Do you have an idea of how many people of Irish descent live in Maine?
I meant to say Pat.
Go ahead, Pat.
I think Michael might have a sense of how many people there are from of Irish descent.
I can give you a very accurate number. Tomorrow, it will be 100% of people will be Irish.
I'm certain if Maine's got a population of 1.2 million, 200 or 300,000 people, right?
I think so. And in America, for example, well, the population of Ireland as a whole, north and south, is about 5.5 million. Those who claim Irish ancestry in America is over 40 million. So you can see that they've been very prolific once they come here. and get off a potato diet.
So, Pat, I'll ask you this then. Tell me about the Maine Irish Heritage Center. It wasn't always there.
No, it wasn't. It is. It was established about 15 years ago. We took over the old St. Dominic's Church, which is on the corner of State and Gray Street in Portland, and that was the first big church in the state of, well, in the Portland area that was known for the Irish congregation, and we feel privileged that we've been able to take over the building and strive to preserve it, and we run a lot of programs and events and have a big lecture series, genealogy program, library. We're trying to preserve the culture of the Irish here in Maine. And we have a lot of groups that we affiliate with. We call it the Maine Irish Network, from the Irish American Club to the Claddamore Pipe Band to the Irish dancers, Irish language classes, DNA genealogy program, and archives. We have a recent program that we have acquired or worked on is the Brennan Archives, and it is a digital archive of Governor Joseph E. Brennan, who, as many of you know, was the son of Irish immigrants himself. And so those are all of the programs and events that we work on at the center.
Okay, well, speaking of genealogy, Maureen, tell me about the project that you work with. How this is more than the kind of genealogy we see ads on TV for, right? This is very specific. You're helping people connect with family members.
We are, and we've been very successful. We travel to Ireland every year and go to Connemara and get samples of DNA from people there and bring them home and connect them. And we have 1,100 people in our project. And so we try to be very thorough. We try to test the oldest members of families, and we try to get a very complete record and pedigree of that family. So we've been recognized in Ireland as the foremost study of our kind anywhere in the world.
Wow. So tell me about, somebody comes to the Irish Heritage Center and meets with you, Maureen, and says, you know, I want to know more about my relatives in Ireland. What happens then?
Well, we look at all the sources and try to find as much information as we can. But because of because large portion of the population here in Portland is from Connemara, we have a lot of records on those families. One of our stars in the genealogy program is Margaret Feeney Lacombe, and she has been, for 20 years, has been collecting information on people's families. And she used to live in Augusta, and she'd practically live at the archives in Augusta. And she has 150,000 people on her database that tracks family. All those people are tracked on her database, which is amazing.
That is amazing. I want to turn to you, Michael, for just a little more history, because I've learned some things just getting ready for this program, even though I've married into a Portland, Maine Irish family and thought I knew a lot. But there's so much history. And what's so interesting to me is I think folks who live in Portland or Belfast aren't aware that Irish immigrants really settled every corner of Maine, didn't they? Even places that we think of as Franco.
Exactly. Like Lewiston, for example. We tend to think of it as Franco, or today, large Somali population. But before the French came to Lewiston, the Irish were there digging the canals, building the factories. And then once they were ready to work, the factories were ready, and the French came in large numbers from Canada. So I remember when I was getting ready to shop around my first book on the history of the Irish in Maine, the University of Maine Press was most interested in it because it was widespread throughout the state, all the way up to Aroostook County and the fascinating story about Benedicta in the southern end of Aroostook County, started by an Irish bishop from Boston, Benedict Fenwick. And the idea was to bring Irish people from the land, from the farms of Ireland, and to create potato farms for them in southern Aroostook County.
That's right, because many people, even though they were farmers in Ireland, chose not to be farmers when they got to the United States. What kind of jobs were people working in when they got to the U.S., whether it was in the 1850s or 1880s?
The general description would be entry-level jobs, jobs that didn't require a college degree or an education, because most of these people, as you mentioned, came off the land, and they were looking for anything. It was hard, manual labor. Jim Mundy did a lovely book called Hard Times, Hard Men, and it talked about in Bangor and Portland the kind of work. Working on the railroad, working longshore, working construction, anything that required muscles. The Irish who were born over here were often called narrowbacks because they didn't have the same muscular structure as the Irish who came over and worked those hard jobs.
Mm. And interesting, the quarries in Vinyl Haven, I understand a lot of people died right on the job.
Absolutely. There was a famous case of one Irishman in particular, Elizabeth Gurley Flynn's father, who actually had an eye that was lost from an accident in the quarries. So wherever they could find work, they took it, but it was very hard work. In Portland, they started one of the first labor unions, which was the Portland Longshoremen's Benevolent Society, and way back in 1880. So they were looking out after themselves at the same time.
And we've heard that the Irish in Maine faced a lot of discrimination. I've read that factory owners often would pit those of French heritage against those of Irish, saying, you know, if you demand more money or demand better conditions, we'll just bring in the other ethnicity. But that discrimination was really not just in factories, was it? You know, we saw people run out of their homes, their homes burned, their churches burned.
Absolutely. There's a famous case of a church up in Bath that was actually burned to the ground. And ironically, it was not a Catholic church. It was a Protestant church. But the reason for its burning was that they were allowing Roman Catholics in the area to use that for Mass. And so during the anti-immigrant hysteria of the time, we've had several of those over the years, that church was burned to the ground. Another example would be St. Patrick's Church up in Newcastle, Damariscotta Mills, the oldest Catholic church in Maine and one of the oldest in the country. The Know-Nothings threatened to burn that, but the local Irish heard about it and protected the church.
Mm. I want to turn back to you, Pat, and ask, you say that a big part of the Irish American Heritage Center, the Irish Heritage Center, is to preserve the culture. What is it that you want children, grandchildren, folks who are getting further and further away from the original immigrants to know and understand?
I think we all want them to know and understand what their ancestors went through when they came here. Most of them, when they left, you know, if they came in the 19th century or the early 20th century, those people left and never saw their families in Ireland again. And so it was hard to keep that kind of connection up. I think all three of us sitting here grew up in families that we knew, that we had grandparents that, you know, spoke Gaelic or could write Gaelic, and we never learned that growing up. It was part of our heritage that just kind of disappeared. And I think those are the kinds of things we're trying to keep in place and keep the connection with Ireland. And I think Maureen can probably speak more to it, but what we're hearing in Ireland now is there's a great interest in Ireland in learning where everybody went, because so many people emigrated, as Michael has said. You know, the population in the United States that can trace their roots back to Ireland far exceeds the actual population in Ireland. I mean, entire families left. In my own family, I had four grandparents that came from Ireland, and each one of my grandparents, they had one sibling who stayed behind basically to care for the parents, but everybody else left. And so there was a whole part of the heritage that, you know, has been lost, and I think we're trying to make that connection again.
Sure. I read this morning it's estimated that between 1845 and 1855, 1.5 million people fled Ireland. It's staggering. I can't even imagine those kind of numbers. Maureen, you've traveled to Ireland. Tell me about what Pat was just talking about and what people there say to you.
I travel there this year. I'm going in May, and it'll be my 15th trip. So we go often. and we go as a group. And in Karna, they're building an immigrant commemorative center, and the name is going to be changed to the Connemara Commemorative Center. And so they're a really great connection to us. And so we go there, and we try to find the oldest person in the community with whatever their name is and get their DNA and connect to them. So it's the Carnaby Hotel is my second home. We go there, and everybody knows us and recognizes us. Michael and I are ambassadors to the Commemorative Center. It's being opened in May, and Marty Walsh is another one of the ambassadors, the mayor of Boston. And so we're all going to celebrate. Many of us from the Maine Irish Heritage Center are going to celebrate the opening of this wonderful center in Karna.
Wow.
Yeah.
I had no idea. That's so exciting. When you're there, are you treated as though you never left?
Yes. My family is just welcome home, they say to me when I come. Welcome home. And my family didn't emigrate here till the early 1900s, and there were 12 in the family, and 8 of them came here. And they got work on Longshore. So I feel very connected. I know I stood in the room on a small island in Kilcarran Bay where my grandfather was born, and I don't have words to tell you what that meant to me. It was an amazing, amazing experience. So they love that we're interested in them. And we go and ask people, will they let us have their DNA? And we've only, in all the time we've been doing this, had one person say no.
Wow.
So they're thrilled that you're interested. They're just so thrilled that you're interested in them.
Wow. Well, we're talking about Irish heritage in Maine. We'd love to have you join the conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page.
Well, in the merry month of May, now from me home I started, left the girls and two were nearly broken hearted, saluted father dear, kissed me darling mother, drank a pint of beer, me grief and tears to smother, then off to reap the corn and leaf, for I was born, got a stout MacArthur, the banished ghost and goblets, a brand new pair of brogues to rot the love of the bogs and frighten all the dogs on the rocky road. It's a double of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, hunt ahead and turn down the rocky road, and all the ways to double and make for love.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does the Wonder Foundation, in support of the Colby College Museum of Art, always free and open to the public.
Next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour, a comedy about one of the worst dictatorships in history, and I don't mean the producers. It's Armando Iannucci's The Death of Stalin.
It's a comedy of paranoia. It's a comedy of anxiety, really. In The Death of Stalin, if they make a mistake, they're dead.
That's next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour.
Join us for the New Yorker Radio Hour tomorrow afternoon at 2, and again Sunday evening at 11 on Maine Public Radio.
Music this week from Corinne Pawwart's theatrical event Wind Resistance and from fiddler Duncan Chisholm's Sandwood Bay takes you to some very special landscapes on the Thistle and Shamrock.
And you can hear the Thistle and Shamrock tomorrow evening at 8 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
A little bit of the band Flogging Molly and the song Whistles the Wind. And before that, we heard the Dubliners and Rocky Road to Dublin. Hi, this is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we are talking about the Irish in Maine. With me in the studio, Michael Connolly, an author, historian, and professor. Pat Dunn, the chair of the Maine Irish Heritage Center. Maureen Coyne Norris is with the Maine Gaeltacht DNA Project. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. And we're going to start with Brad, who's calling from Oars Island. Hi, Brad. Go ahead.
Hi. Hey, I wanted to join in your guest just before the break. I have to say ditto to everything, because I own a piece of property on Merrymeeting Bay that was settled by my, we think, 10th great-grandparents who came over from Garva on the ship called the McCallum, and they were warned out of Boston and wound up going into Merrymeeting Bay in September of 1718, where they settled. And my great-grandfather during the 40s was doing our genealogy and discovered that this piece of property had, he assumed anyway, was where they had settled and purchased it. So it's been in my family now four generations since my great-grandfather. But I'm doing an archaeological dig on the site. This will be our sixth year starting. But I just, it's been a fascinating conversation. I, too, have had the opportunity to go to Northern Ireland, to the area called Somerset on the Band River in Garva, which is where my family left from. And prior to 5 years or 6 years ago, I really, like some of the panel, I only knew through family stories and all. I was fortunate enough to have a piece of property in the family, which we, you know, assumed and I always believed was their location. And in fact, we have found remnants dating back to the period.
Wow, Brad. Really, really interesting. Michael, how often are you hearing of an archaeological dig? That's really great.
That's really a great story. I'd be interested if Brad could tell us the names or at least the surnames of those who came over from Garva.
Yep. It was on the male side of the family, Andrew McFadden and his wife, Jane Lindsay. And they had four boys. And they settled on Merrymeeting Bay, and again, while they were there until 1722, they had two more children, Daniel and a daughter, Somerset, and which, on the request of the proprietors, they name her that because of the area they came from. But in 1722, they were burnt out by the Indians during the raid and fled to Georgetown.
Mm.
That's a fascinating story, because the McCallum, the ship that he mentions, Brad, that's the first one that transports the Irish from what we today call Northern Ireland over to
right.
this area. So you mentioned being turned away from Boston. Also, they were turned away from New Hampshire, although some of them stayed. And there were the two cities in New Hampshire called Derry and Londonderry, just as there are two names for the same city in Northern Ireland today. So his story is a fascinating one.
Brad, thanks so much for calling and sharing that. We're going to move on to Chris calling from Yarmouth. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Hi there. Hang on just a second here. I have to play with my phone a little bit. Okay, can you hear me all right?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Well, this is just something I was listening to the show, and I just had to call in on it. Because I live in Yarmouth, I don't know if probably everybody does this, but I was looking at my house on Google Maps, and up in the sort of northern corner of Yarmouth, there was a town name up there, which I'd never heard of, which was, the name of the town, name was Sodom, S-O-D-O-M, and I was curious what that was about, and so I Googled that, and it came up. There was one small story about it. There was supposedly a labor camp for the railroad, I assume Irish, and that it was named that by some railroad executive because of the, I guess, the his feelings about the people working there. But I wondered if anybody else knew anything about that as far as them working on the railroad.
Yes, I can say a couple of things about that. The Irish did work on the railroad. There's a famous song, of course, Paddy Works on the Railroad, and that's based on the truth. What often happened, and could well be the case here, is that the Irish would be working on the railroad, and at some point they would be very happy with the area they were working in and decide to stay there and to raise their family. So if you follow some of the Irish communities in Maine heading up toward Quebec or Montreal, you will find pockets of Irish living at a lot of these depots. And this could be one of them, although the name probably has an Old Testament root.
Chris, thanks so much for your call. We have a tweet from the Little Sea Folk Festival. We're pretty excited to be hosting the Little Sea Folk Festival on June 30th at the Maine Irish Heritage Center. Irish music, dance, culture, language, history, craft, and more all in one spot. And the the website address, littleseafolkfestival.com. You want to add anything to that, Pat?
I would just say that we celebrated Maine Irish Day at the Maine Legislature, and the Little Sea Folk were there to perform. And if you go to the Maine Irish Heritage Center's Facebook page, you will see them. There's a video of them performing in the Hall of Flags at the State House.
Terrific. And we'll make sure we get some information on our Maine Calling Facebook page. We're going to go to Tony calling from South Portland. Hi, Tony. Go ahead.
Hey.
Hey, Tony. Are you there? Okay, so what we'll try to do is if you could call back, that'd be terrific. We'll move on to Leo calling from Limerick. Hi, Leo, go ahead.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I'm an old music teacher that taught for 30 years in Waterboro, and one of the songs that we used to listen to was called Letters from Kilkelly, and it was by Greenfields of America, and it was one of those wonderful stories about people moving from Ireland to America and working on the railroad, and how the father who lived in Ireland didn't want him to work on the railroad. It's definitely a classic song, for people to know.
Any of you familiar with that?
I think I've heard of that, and I think it's a very sad song because I think that the people want to go back and visit their relatives, but they never get a chance to, which was a sad reality.
And Maureen, that is the story, isn't it? People came over and nobody ever went back, or rarely did somebody have an opportunity to go back.
Yes, they would have funerals for them when they left.
Called the American Wake.
So if they left for America, they knew that they would never see their family again, so the family had a wake.
Yeah. Mm. And they still did that right up through the 1950s, because even with increased chances of transportation, there usually wasn't the money to go back home.
Mm. Leo, thanks so much for your call. I will go to Newport and Mike. Hi, Mike. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a second generation Irish. My grandfather immigrated from Galway. And I'm going to take advantage of my right to Irish citizenship, dual citizenship. And I wondered if any of your guests had any advice on that process.
How many of you have done that? I know I have.
I haven't done it.
I haven't done it yet. I've got the paperwork, but it's a lot of work to do it.
Yeah, it is. And you need original birth certificates and original. You can't get copies of any of that stuff.
So but let me know who's eligible.
If you have a grandparent who was born in Ireland, you're eligible to file for Irish citizenship. But you have to get, as Maureen said, you have to get an original birth certificate, which I think is getting easier because the Irish government has released a lot more records online, so it's much easier to track it down. But because one of the problems I think all of us have had is trying to find out, you know, you have dates that you think that a relative was born, and then now that these records are being released, you're finding out they're very different. I can tell you that the dates that, you know, I had in records for my grandparents, you know, births don't match up with what I am now finding when I'm actually getting to see the actual records.
Interesting.
And if you have, I'm sorry, did you say you have Galway?
Galway. Now, I'll be in Ireland this summer. What I'm wondering is the county clerk or the parish, I mean, where's the best place to get these records?
Yes, in Galway City.
One of the difficulties for Irish people is that in the Civil War, which broke out in the 1920s, the customs house was badly burned by the Irish rebels, and many of the records went up in smoke. So sometimes it's very, very difficult to find them. And if they exist in the administrative offices in Galway, that would be very good for you. Other than that, you have to pretty much go out to the local parish priests. And sometimes they kept great records, and sometimes they didn't. So it's a matter of hit or miss.
And I would encourage you to visit the Maine Irish Heritage Center. And most of the genealogists are in on Fridays from 10 to 2. And I'm sure we could give you a lot of direction, and we may have a lot of information on your family since you are Galway. Margaret's records are unbelievably wonderful. And I'm sure you would enjoy yourself, and we could be of great help to you.
All right, Mike, thanks, and good luck to you. We're going to go to Declan calling from Belfast. That just sounds so fun to say today. Hi, Declan.
Hi, Jennifer. sustaining member for the last 20 years. I've been here for 30 years, so I'm a recent immigrant, and I'm probably of the last generation that had an American wake when I left West Cork. Got married in St. Patrick's Church in Newcastle to a lovely woman from Bath, and we've been living in Belfast for 30 years. My immigrant experience has been very positive, and we've been hearing a lot recently about immigration and how difficult it is and how dangerous it is to be an immigrant. But being an Irish immigrant to America, you almost get a leg up above everybody else. It's almost better to come as an Irish person than to actually be born here as a Mexican-American or an African-American. Mm-hmm. I did notice when I came here that the patterns of migration for Irish people were that the older main families that had Irish roots typically came through Canada, and the more recent Irish-Americans that were living in Maine, they came from Massachusetts, so they would have immigrated through Boston. And I wonder if your panelists would talk about the difference in the migration. We visited Quebec a number of years ago and went to Grosse Isle, which is a very poignant immigrant site just outside Quebec City. And I'm sure your panelists would be able to talk about that.
Declan, thanks for calling.
I can speak a little bit to that. The phenomenon of Irish coming through Canada was logical, because in the British Empire at the time, Ireland was considered congested. In fact, there's a thing called congested districts boards over there. So they were more than happy to get people to leave a heavily congested area and go to Canada, for example, which was a dominion that was considered to be underpopulated. In fact, they would subsidize and pay for the trips over. However, once they arrived in Canada, many of them had a different idea, and they would stay for a short while in Canada and then either hoof it by foot down to Maine or across the border, or become what were known as two boaters and take a second boat trip down to Boston.
Huh. That's a great story. Thanks, Declan, for calling. We have an email from Barbara. I have the marriage certificate of my ancestor, Martin W. Wise, who married Louisa Weber Marr of Richmond, Maine, and Hollowell on the 10th of August, 1823. The certificate states only that Martin Wise was born in Ireland in 1793. I would like to know more about his origins in Ireland. Is that enough information, Maureen, if she were to come to the Maine Irish Center and talk with a genealogist to find out some information?
Yes. Wise may be a Jewish name, and there were lots of Jewish people in Dublin who are Irish Jewish. And yes, we could help.
Okay, great. We're going to go back to Tony, who tried to call before. Hi, Tony. Can we hear you this time?
Hello, Jennifer.
Oh,
can you hear me?
Yes. Much better. Go ahead.
Okay. Sorry about that. And say hello to, is that Michael Connolly there?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, it is.
Okay. And Maureen. Yeah. I'm the artistic director of AIR, which is the American Irish Repertory Ensemble here in Portland. And we've been in existence since 2004. And this is all just really a shameless plug for Irish culture. We've been doing Irish and Irish American plays for all that time. And it's a great time here for culture in Irish culture in Portland. I was up there yesterday in Augusta plugging away. And it was just great, you know, between the Stilson Dancers and Little C and all the athletic groups. Again, it was just a great time to be Irish here in Portland.
And it's a great thing to have Tony Riley and the AIR Theater, and their contribution to Irish culture in this area has been tremendous. And we're so glad that it's ongoing, and so glad to have that association with the Maine Irish Heritage Center.
Thank you, Michael. And just again, another plug, we'll be producing our next play in April. It's Outside Mullingar by John Patrick Shanley, the Irish-American playwright. And it's just a wonderful, sweet, romantic comedy.
Well, Tony, thank you. And I'll ask Michael for some information. We'll put a link on our Facebook page. Well, we do have to take another quick break. Before we do so, a word about Monday's program. It's going to be our automotive show. If you have questions, you can put them in ahead of time. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Camp Alsing, a Maine summer camp for kids with high-functioning autism and other social challenges, campalsing.com, and Maine General Health, offering services for every stage of a woman's life. Learn more at mainegeneral.org.
The Trump administration's tougher stance on immigration has put a spotlight on Customs and Border Protection officers.
We're seeing an increase of trainees because they want to do Customs and Border Protection work because CBP is hiring.
On Next from the New England News Collaborative, a look at how CBP officers are trained, how they police our borders, and the issues some civil rights advocates are raising. Please join us.
Stay with us for Next, coming up in about 20 minutes after Maine Calling at 2 o'clock on Maine Public Radio.
I'm Bill Littlefield. In 1993, Chris Street set a free throw record at the University of Iowa. 3 days later, he died.
You know, as a parent who's lost a child, you don't want people to forget him. And I guess with that record, it was just another thing to remind people not to forget him.
But last month, Street's record faced a serious threat. That story is coming up this week on Only a Game. Join us.
And you can hear Only a Game tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. I was going to tell the audience what that song is, but you already know, don't you, Michael?
Yeah. You just heard a little piece from the blind harper, Turlock O'Carolan, and that was probably played by the chieftains, I imagine.
Carolan's Concerto.
Yes,
yeah,
indeed.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I have the name Rachel Van Voorhees here. Yeah. So anyway, beautiful. Is that harp?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, wonderful. So welcome back again. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, on the eve of St. Patrick's Day, we are talking about the Irish in Maine. And no, we do not have enough time, but we're doing our best. My guests are Maureen Coyne Norris with the Maine Gaeltacht DNA Project, Michael Connolly, an author and historian, and Pat Dunn, the chair of the Maine Irish Heritage Center. If you'd like to join the conversation, the number 1-800-399-3566. You guys are grinning. Did I mispronounce it?
You did just fine.
He says, fine. Aren't you nice?
No, it's true. You did fine.
An email from Greg. Knew that I had an English connection through my great-grandfather, whose mother was the child of English immigrants to the U.S. in the mid-1880s. But recent DNA testing indicates that I am 10% Irish, not English. So apparently my ancestors immigrated first to England, then to America. Used to kid my sisters about thinking they were Irish every St. Patrick's Day, but this will be the first one we celebrate as partly Irish. Maureen, DNA testing's changing everything, isn't it?
It is. It's so exciting. We're very excited when we can help people with that kind of story. And then we have loads of people who don't know who their parents are, and we've been able to help people find their parents. It's very exciting.
And how common, Michael, is that, that someone didn't come directly from Ireland but through England, thinking they were English?
It's very common. It could happen in a couple of ways. First of all, many people came to settle in Ireland from England, and so they could have names that sounded English. Another thing is there's a whole list of names that sound Irish, like Burke and Butler and things like that. They could sound almost English, but they're actually French Norman. Like Burke would be de Burgo and Butler would be de Butler. And then, as you said, a lot of people wanted to go first of all to England because that would be short-term immigration, and then they were always hoping to come back. But oftentimes they would just decide to go from there to America.
We'll go to Brian calling from Dresden. Hi, Brian. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking the call. Doing some recent digging and found that I have some British and Irish ancestry in the Maine area. But, excuse me, I also found that on my mother's side that I have some Irish that had emigrated in the mid and late 19th century. And curious, they were in the south on the Gulf Coast of Alabama. And obviously there's a pretty heavy concentration of Irish in New York and New England. But I was curious if there were quite a few immigrants to the south as well, or if they were fairly few and far between.
Certainly not as many as in the north, but sometimes there would be something attracting them there, perhaps a job. Oftentimes there would be labor contractors that would be looking for low-wage workers to come, and they might end up in places like Alabama and actually find that they liked it there, especially if it was in the winter.
Brian, thank you for your call. We have a tweet from John. Let's not forget Irish culture manifest in sport. Maine Gaelic Sports Alliance and Portland Hurling Club spearheading these efforts, among others. And then he writes, is it Slanty?
Slanta.
Slanta. Slanta. And what does that mean?
To your good health.
Okay.
Health. Yeah. Sort of a version of Lacayum.
Okay.
That sport, by the way, is often called organized mayhem. And they have two major sports, Gaelic football and hurling. And hurling is played with the sticks.
We'll go to Cynthia calling from South Berwick. Hi, Cynthia. Go ahead.
Hi. Nice to hear you today. It's a great program. I wanted to mention two things that for all visitors, I'm a retired librarian, and for all visitors who are heading for, Americans who are heading for their first trip to Ireland, I encourage them to go see the Book of Kells. I've never seen it, but it's on my list, my life list, and that's in Dublin. And it's a wonderful, beautiful, illuminated manuscript, one of the treasures of the world. So it can be part of your Irish heritage tour. And secondly, I was curious about the statistics about, I've also sort of, I knew I had a teeny bit of Irish heritage. I have a lot of Midwestern ancestry, and I've been working on my heritage through DNA as well as public documents, and have discovered that I'm, you know, a lot more Irish than I realized. And I wondered if people like me, who might be anywhere now from 25 to 40% Irish, are included in the statistics that you mentioned earlier. Like, is it possible that there's a larger number of us who have Irish heritage? And I'll take my answer off the call, off the air, or off the phone. Thanks. Bye.
It's entirely possible. In fact, They often say that what's new with history? Well, what's new with history is new information, new technology. And I think that, they are finding that people do have small and large connections that they never realized before. So welcome to the club.
Thanks, Cynthia. And we'll go to Nathan calling from Portland. Hi, Nathan. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. For taking my call. I have a special connection to Mike, too, so special hello, Mike. Great landlord, by the way. So what I was calling about was the increase in this genetic testing that you guys have been talking about, how you guys feel it has impacted not only people discovering that they're Irish, but all of a sudden looking more for their Irish roots. I bought one for my father a few years ago, and I thought I was largely English, but I found out that I have something like 10 or 12% Irish on my father's side. And when I went to do some research to find out about it, the only thing I could find was it was a three great grandfather relationship and that he was born in Ireland. The end. That's all the information that was out there. So I was curious, one, what you thought about the impact of more people doing genetic testing, and then two, are there any tools for people like me who have newly discovered Irish heritage who can't find a lot of information?
Yes, I think you need to visit us at the Maine Irish Heritage Center, and we have a lot of information and a lot of tools. And could I ask you what company you tested with?
Ancestry.com.
Ancestry.com. And that's, of course, the most popular one. And we can for a small fee, merge your results on Ancestry to FTDNA, which is the company that we use and we find the most useful. And by doing that, you would have access to a lot more tools to find out more about your ancestry. So we would encourage you to do that, and we would be very happy to help you with that at the Maine Irish Heritage Center.
There you go, Nathan. We have Suzanne on Facebook writes, a few years ago, I was traveling in Ireland with friends staying in Roundstone. While visiting the Aran Islands, we took a tour around the island in a beat-up Volkswagen. Our talkative driver asked where we were from, and when we said Maine, he lit right up. Ah, Portland, he said. A lot of Flaherty boys went there to fish. Good fishermen, those boys. I found it so wonderful that even through the boys, though the boys had left the island many years ago, they were still there, Flaherty boys.
That's true. Interestingly, when I go in May to Ireland, my grandmother is a McDonough from Inishmore, and it's my intention to get us started by testing the major names on Inishmore. And then we'll have that area well mapped. So it's exciting. Inishmore is wonderful.
Suzanne, thanks so much for your post. We're going to go to Anne in Portland. Hi, Anne. Go ahead.
Yes, thanks, Jennifer, for taking my call. And hello to all my good friends there on the program today. I take small groups. I design and lead small groups in my native Ireland. But I wanted to point out an interesting project being done by Sean and Anne Ryan, who bought Leap Castle, although over there they call it Leap Castle. I brought my group there a few years back, and Leap Castle is considered to be the most haunted castle in Europe. But Michael and Anne, Sean and Anne Ryan bought that castle around 1996, and they are restoring it, but the original chapel at the top, what they call the Bloody Chapel, is still there. It's a very interesting place. But more importantly, Sean Ryan has traveled to Tasmania and parts of Australia, and he began a DNA project to uncover the descendants of children who had been stolen by Cromwell and put on the ships out to the colonies. Mm. And I just thought that would be interesting to Maureen and Mike, anybody there in the group regarding DNA. And I want to say also about my own DNA when I decided to go ahead and do that, although I'm supposedly 100% Irish, born there of Irish parents and all the way back, I'm 7% Asian. So none of us is 100% anything.
That's a great point, Anne, and thank you so much for calling. And everybody here is smiling at that point. We only have a couple minutes left, but I want to ask each of you what you're going to be doing tomorrow. Pat, I'm going to start with you.
Well, tomorrow, first thing tomorrow morning, I will be at the Irish Heritage Center because the tradition is on St. Patrick's Day that we march or parade from the center through the neighborhood in the West End down to Harborview Park, which is that park that overlooks the Casco Bay Bridge, and raise the Irish flag. So we'll be gathering in front of the center about 8:30 tomorrow morning to do that. And we will have, weather permitting, a piper that will pipe us down to the park, and we'll raise the flag. And then at noontime, we have the Irish American Club is sponsoring its annual St. Patrick's Day parade that is down on Commercial Street. It's become a bigger and bigger event every year. They'll have pipe bands and the Stilson Irish dancers and a lot of good fun. And then we'll have an open house at the Maine Irish Heritage Center tomorrow afternoon after the parade, and everybody's welcome to come. And there'll be food and dance and music, and the genealogist will be around. And so
That's what you'll be doing tomorrow,
it
too,
is.
Maureen.
I'll be in the Genealogy Center and encouraging everybody to become members of the Irish Heritage Center, Maine Irish Heritage Center, so that we can keep these projects and this beautiful building alive. It's very important.
And I have three items, and these are things coming up afterwards. On the day after St. Patrick's Day, Sunday, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, there's a Cayley, an Irish dance at Rira. The following month, April 10th, at Maine Historical Society, the 20th anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement, there's going to be a documentary film on the connection between Joe Brennan and Senator George Mitchell. And finally, in May, the first weekend of May, Christine Keneally, the authoritative professor on the famine from Quinnipiac College will be here in Portland.
Wow. And so we're going to put all that on our Facebook page. Thank you all. The voice you just heard, Michael Donnelly, author, historian, and professor at St. Joseph's College. Pat Dunn is also here, the chair of the Maine Irish Heritage Center. And Maureen Coyne Norris is with the Maine Gael Talk DNA Project. I want to thank Vinnie O'Malley for his help putting this show together. Roddy Nickpour ran the board. Owen Manahan answered your calls. I'm Jennifer Brooks. This is Maine Calling.